is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
And I welcome Professor Paul Halpern at the University of the Sciences, the author of a new book, Flashes of Creation, George Gamow, Fred Hoyle, and the Great Big Bang Debate of the 20th Century. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Let's get our two protagonists born. Georgi Antonovich Gamow, born Odessa, March of 1904. I find most ironic his father was a teacher. This was the time that there was much excitement in Russia because of the revolution, 1905, and then the 1917-1918 revolution. But his father, who was one of his father's students, and what did our hero, Georgi Antonovich Gamow, make of that fact? Good evening to you, Paul.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on the show. It's spelled Gio and pronounced Joe Gamow, that he always went by the American nickname Joe, interestingly enough, or you could say George. His father was Anton Gamow, who was a very bright school teacher, and his student was Lev Bronstein, better known as Leon Trotsky, the Russian revolutionary, a future Russian revolutionary. And interestingly, the young Trotsky tried to institute a kind of coup in Anton's classroom. He thought that Anton was an unfair teacher and circulated a petition, and every student signed one letter of the petition to emphasize the fact that everybody was united against the teacher. And they circulated it to the headmaster of the school, but luckily for the Gamows, Anton was not fired, so the coup d'etat failed.
This is the early part of the 20th century, and what we're talking about is revolution, but not revolution politically, revolution in physics and cosmology. Gamow, our hero, is born now, and we leave him because his education will include the lucky step to go to the University of, one time, St. Petersburg, later Petrograd, later Leningrad, now again St. Petersburg in Russia. We need to turn to Fred Hoyle, born 1915, 11 years younger, in January, in West Yorkshire. His mother and father also significant in his life, especially my reading, Paul. His mother, a pianist, a very good pianist. What did the young explorer learn from his mother that he used later in life, Paul?
Well, we'll find that our protagonists are very cinematic. And Hoyle loved the cinema. And that's because his mother had a job at the cinema for silent films. She would play the background music for the films. And these films would be sort of corny westerns or early love stories and so forth, kind of kitschy films. And instead of playing the kitschy music that went along with the films, she would play beautiful classical music. And at one point she was fired because they found out she was playing the wrong music. But then they realized that people were going to the cinema to hear her play the music, not to see the films. So she was reinstated. And young Fred used to sit in the audience and watch the subtitles of the films. And that's how he learned how to read.
Wonderful to have these two stories, because both men, Gamow and Hoyle, are storytellers. That's their genius, to transfer their knowledge of physics and cosmology to a popular public at the same time, to make it available to all of us to understand where we are in the 21st century with cosmology and physics. It all's connected. We now go to the education of Gamow. His father sells some of the family's silver. I always thought that was an apocryphal story, Paul, but here it is. To send the young Joe, off to Petrograd University, where he's fortunate to have one of his inspirational teachers, Alexander Friedman. Who was he, Paul?
So Friedman was a trained meteorologist, and he was very interested in mapping out high altitude weather and went up in balloons to explore these measurements. But he also turned to cosmology because in 1915, the year that Fred Hoyle was born, coincidentally, that's when Albert Einstein released his general theory of relativity. And that had some solutions which were intended to describe the universe. And Friedman decided to take a crack at that, and he developed his own solutions of Einstein's theory of general relativity that expand in some ways, ironically, like a balloon. So he imagined the universe blowing up like a balloon with all the dots let's say you painted dots on the side of the balloon, getting more and more separate over time. And in one of his models, the balloon keeps expanding forever. In another model, the balloon deflates. Now, unfortunately, Friedman came up with a theory in 1922, really enticed Gamow, because Gamow took a course in general relativity with Friedman. But then several years later, Friedman went up in a balloon, caught cold, and then, I don't know if this is related, but sometime later, he got typhoid and died at a young age.
Yes, it's a playwright in the sky, Paul, that gives us the balloon theory of the universe, which isn't bad, with a balloonist exit for our inspiration, Professor Friedman. However, at the same time, we have to watch the fact that Gamow was fortunate in his progress from Friedman's inspiration to other voices, including Einstein's, who was often in the news and often in cosmology and also in physics. Did Gamow make a decision at this point that he was going to pursue special relativity and general relativity? Did he find himself absorbed by that community?
Well, when Gamow took Friedman's course, he wanted to pursue those fields. But then because of Friedman's death, he had to switch to quantum physics, which led him eventually to nuclear physics. And we're fortunate, science is fortunate, that Gamow switched fields briefly because he made major inroads in nuclear physics. He discovered the process of the mathematical process of how alpha particles can decay, which is a radiative process. He understood how something called quantum tunneling can enable particles that are of opposite charge, like protons, to get together and overcome the energy barriers between them. And today we know that that's the fusion process that fuels the stars. And then his theory was also used to understand how to make particle colliders, accelerators that collide into fixed targets and later into moving targets.
There are theories floating around in the air right now, and Gamow has our interlocutor with those theories. But I want to follow his adventures as a young Russian, a Russian revolutionary product, because by this time in the 1920s, Leningrad and Moscow are dominated by apparatchiks and commissars. And of course, with Lenin's death, we pass on to Stalin and the Central Committee. But that doesn't prevent Gamow from winning permission to go to the Niels Bohr, well, first to Göttingen for an exercise in wave function and a lot of discovery that gives him his PhD at Leningrad. But then he goes to Niels Bohr's Institute in Copenhagen. And you have a wonderful picture in your book of Niels Bohr's Institute in the snow. So I imagined Gamow traipsing through the light snow each day with his motorcycle. Did he ride his motorcycle in the snow? Because you make much of the fact that he was daring.
I'm not sure if he would ride in the deep snow, but he rode his motorcycle everywhere. He loved his motorcycle and rode it all around Europe. And Niels Bohr borrowed it at least once, and other people borrowed it. He taught people how to use the motorcycle. So that was one of his trademarks. His other trademark at the Niels Bohr Institute was his cartooning. He had some language issues in the beginning because they were speaking Danish, English, and German, and he didn't know any of those languages to start with. So he could draw sketches and make people laugh through his sketches.
The events in Copenhagen followed by geopolitics crowding in on us, Paul, because he will be obliged or felt it necessary to return to the Soviet Union, where increasingly he was circumscribed. I'll go quickly here. But he meets a young woman and falls in love and sees that he needs to escape. I love the moment where they're on the Black Sea trying to escape in a rubber boat. I thought that was terrific staging on Paul's part. I mean, on Gamow's part, because I thought they were going to die. But they didn't. They eventually find a way to the West by attending a conference. Did he, in his mind, reject the communists? Was he a political writer as well as a person who wrote physics?
Gamow was generally apolitical and non-religious. He didn't like controversy. But at the same time, he didn't like the communist regime precisely because it was so political. And once it started to intrude into science and started to argue that science should be interpreted through Marxist-Leninist philosophy, that was the line in the sand. Gamov couldn't see doing any scientific work if it's going to be proscribed by following certain political beliefs. And that's when he knew that he had to escape from the Soviet Union, and he knew that he had to bring his young wife with him. So they tried the rubber kayak in the Black Sea. They were going to go to Turkey and pretend that they were Danish and go to the Danish embassy and have Niels Bohr bail them out. But they barely made it across the sea. They went out for one day, and the next day was stormy. They were blown back to shore. So that was it for that plan. But luckily, Niels Bohr arranged that he was the Soviet representative to the Salve Conference of 1933. And he worked very hard, Gamov worked very hard, to get his wife to be able to go along with him so that they could escape.
They eventually do escape all the way to George Washington University. But we need to turn to Fred, who's 11 years younger. And these two competing thinkers of the 20th century about the origins and the sustaining of the universe will meet eventually, but right now they're living parallel lives in cosmology and physics. The book is Flashes of Creation, George Gamow, Fred Hoyle, and the Great Big Bang Debate. Paul Halpern is the author. I'm John Batchelor.